for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 340 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the beginning of a series of interviews from San Diego Comic-Con. Of course, I have to thank the folks from BH Impact and DC, as well as the people from IDW and Image for this week's discussions. Everything starts off with Paul Dini, one of my very favorite writers and working for DC. Then we talk with Sam Humphries from Image Comics about his upcoming book, Blackbird. Next up is Cecil Castellucci and Marley Zerconi. They're from Shade the Changing Girl, which is becoming Shade the Changing Woman, which is one of the things we discuss from DC. Then I talk with John Barber from IDW about the recent news that Marvel is producing some books through them trying to reach a young adult market more effectively, which led me to a bunch of questions that he answers. Then it's time for Steve Orlando talking about The Unexpected and the series that is ongoing and how he's developing that book into something really special. Then we wrap it up with a big event here at the podcast. The first time I've talked to the same creator but through two different companies in the same episode. Sam Humphries is back, and he's talking with artist John Timms about the Harley Quinn book from DC. So it's kind of a big deal here at the podcast to talk to somebody through two different units like that. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to speak with Paul Dini, one of my very favorite writers of all time. How are you doing today, Paul?
Great, Wayne. How about yourself?
Good, good. Well, why don't you tell us what you're doing, what's coming up?
Well, I was just wandering on the floor getting artwork. Let's see. What have I got coming up? Next week, I have a story in, coming out in Beach Blanket Bad Guys in the anthology, Mr. Freeze story. It's a fun story where I get to reinvent him a little bit in a way that I've always wanted to experiment with him. And after that, I've got a story coming up in Batgirl, which I guess will be out in early to mid-August, which is a part of Batgirl 25. It's a standalone story with Batgirl going up against a villain that I created years ago that I've always wanted to experiment a little bit more with. And her name is March Harriet. She works as a partner sometimes in conjunction with the Mad Hatter. So that's been a lot of fun, and beyond that, that's about it.
It'll keep you busy for a while.
Yeah, staying busy.
Now, as I mentioned to you, I got a chance to review your graphic novel,
yes.
I think Darkest Night. I really loved that. You went through an experience that's a lot more intense than what many of us do, although some of us had something like that.
Sure.
Talk about that graphic novel a little bit, if you would.
Well, it was very cathartic for me to write the novel. When I pitched it to DC, they thought it would make an interesting story to come from the point of view of somebody who worked on as a writer on Batman to brush with crime and had it shadow their life a little bit. So, and especially playing with the idea that there was no Batman for me that night, that I essentially had to be Batman myself if I wanted to just take a few steps and move out of this dark place I was in.
Well, that must have been something to write that, though. I mean, when you were putting that together and telling your story, I mean, did you pretty accurately follow it, or did you have to make adjustments for what happened?
Well, it was pretty accurate. I took notes at the time of what happened, and I wrote them down on note cards and journal entries and various things here and there, where there were a few instances where either people had died or had moved on with their life, and I was not able to put them in the book. Or I decided it would be like true to the spirit of the book to combine a character or two, and but for the most part, it follows the events pretty closely, and you know, parallels exactly where I was in my life at that time.
Is that tough to revisit?
It was like opening up a a room that had been sealed for a long time, and there's still some, you know, monsters under the bed, things like that. But once I went in and did that, I was able to just take, once it was done, once I saw Eduardo's wonderful artwork, then I was able to say, this is something that happened to me a long time ago, and it is something I can put on the shelf and walk away from. And so I was thinking about it the other day. Now it's just a story. You know, it has gone from being the shadow just to a story that I told. And that feels good.
Well, that was really encouraging for some of us because, you know, as genre fans, some of us endure that kind of thing. Although now it's changed a little bit. But that's such a great thing that you did that.
Oh, thank you very much. It was very, like I said, it was very cathartic for me to do it. My wife, Misty, helped me through some of the darker parts of it. Because there were times when I was looking at it again, I just said, I'm done. I can't tell this story. I don't want to go back there. And yet, she helped me, and I did.
Talk a little bit about Batman the Animated Series, because now I understand for the first time it's going to be in high res.
Yes.
On the new channel. I mean, there's another revisit that stuff. That was, I remember rushing home from work to be able to see Batman. The moment I got in the door, I played my cassette so I could watch that day's episode. Talk about that. I mean, it's something to see that the popularity of that show has lasted for decades.
That's a very good feeling to know that I worked on something that a lot of people turned into something that is so iconic and so well thought of, and that continues to this day. You know, you can walk around the floor here, you see all sorts of brand new merchandise that reflects the look of that series. People want to do new stories based on that style. It's become, you know, an iconic iteration of Batman and his world, and I'm very grateful for that. And a lot of times in animation, you work on stuff rather anonymously, or, you know, it comes and goes. But this one really has stuck around, and I'm grateful for that.
Because whenever Batman talks, I hear Kevin Conroy's voice.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. When I was writing Dark Knight, it was his voice in my ear all the time. Yeah.
Any more Batman that you've got maybe you want to do?
No, not coming up anytime soon. So, you know, I like to think I'm never far away from Gotham City, but so who knows? I'll probably show up there, you know, sooner than later.
So you said you don't have any other projects coming that we look forward to?
No, not in publishing, no. I mean, not as far as DC goes or the superheroes go.
Because you were helping with Ultimate Spider-Man, weren't you? Was your name on that?
Yes, I was. I was working on that, so, but animation stuff is, I'm not doing it right at the moment.
Well, you know, wish you more success. If you ever want to tell a Batman story, we'll be here. We'll be ready to read it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And even though I'm not doing Batman, I got a ton of stuff coming up, but I don't really want to talk about it right now because we're talking mostly Batman. So.
That's the way it works in this industry. You can't say certain things until a certain time.
Well, what's the point? 2 years from now, everybody will see it, but right now it's just sort of like pie in the sky. And you diffuse the energy if you say too much.
Well, keep at it. It's wonderful stuff.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Wayne.
It's great to talk to Sam Humphries, one of the creators of Blackbird, which is coming out from Image Comics. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
The basic line about Blackbird. Ooh, it's about a girl who discovers there's magic in the world. And when, is that a sister that gets kidnapped and she has to go rescue her? She gets to use some of that magic, is it my understanding?
This is a coming of age story. So it's about Nina finding her place in the world. And she's a person who had an early experience with magic and has spent the rest of her life having people tell her she's crazy. And then her sister gets kidnapped and her world changes all over again. We're describing it as Harry Potter meets Riverdale.
So where'd the concept come from?
The concept came out of conversations that Jen Bartel and I were having. Jen is the co-creator of the book. We were friends working in comics and just talking about what we wanted to see more of in comics and what kind of books we thought needed to be out there and what excited us. And eventually we just decided to do a book together. And I said, well, Jen, what do you want to draw? Like, what are you interested in? So this is a totally fresh idea that came directly out of the sort of Venn diagram of myself and Jen.
I remember correctly, she wanted to draw monsters.
She wanted to draw monsters. She wanted to draw hot people. She wanted to draw people making out. She wanted to draw neon-drenched cityscapes. And we're just talking about this, and all of a sudden, just like this whole thing is coalescing in my head. And like, this is a comic I would read.
Talk about Nina as a character, because, you know, to have a female lead in comics is not all that common still. What was it like to put a woman in charge of the story? It'd be the focal point of the story.
It was completely natural for us. It was not something that we had to debate or consider or rend our garments over whether a woman can be the lead of the book. As we were talking about the concepts and the themes that we wanted to explore, it just felt natural. And honestly, like, I can't really remember one moment where we decided it was Nina was going to be Nina, but Nina just came to life in our discussions.
Well, I have some friends who think that a woman lead always has to be maternal in nature. That was kind of my reaction, too, because Nina obviously is not going to be maternal in nature, because men can be scoundrels and everything in between, but women tend to only be maternal. So how is Nina going to fit in the spectrum? I mean, what kind of a character is she?
Well, Nina's not going to fit in anybody's preconceptions of what a woman has to be in comics. She's going to make choices based on who we think she is, and she's going to make choices based on what she wants for her life. So she's not going to fit into anybody else's predefined conceptions, nor should any character really, but especially women characters who are far too often placed into boxes by other people.
Now, magic. Talk about how magic works. And out of the blue, it comes and resolves the situation. How are you guys going to handle magic?
Very awesomely. It's going to be amazing. I don't know. We have a whole... We have a whole history of magic. We have a whole system of magic. We have the development of magic as sort of a quote-unquote technology, how it's evolved over the past 1,000 years. And we have a history of how magic has influenced and deformed the development of Los Angeles. So we've got a lot of surprises. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming up. We've got the Great Beast, which I guess I could talk about because it's been revealed in preview images, and that's really just the tip of the iceberg of all the spectacular magic stuff we got coming up.
This is coming out in October?
Correct, October 4th.
Okay, good. And is it an ongoing miniseries? How's this going to work?
Ongoing.
Oh, wow, okay. Do you already have an end in mind, or do you like to let that go and wait to see how the story develops?
We have an end in mind that we've talked out, and it's an ending that if we use that, we feel great about it. But if something else comes up along the way, there's already been things even in just the first 5-6 issues that have come up and has really changed our understanding of the characters in the story. And those are wonderful things to have happen to you. But if they don't happen, we got a plan in place that we can go to anyway.
How did Jen's art influence your concept of the story? Because the way that Nina looks, I mean, sometimes that can alter how you think the character is going to act. Did that happen somewhat with this, or did you have it pretty much formed in your head when it came up?
Well, I mean, Jen's art, her sensibilities, the way she looks at the world and what she loves to draw, everything that she brings to the table as an artist has influenced every aspect of this book from the very beginning. There is no Blackbird without me and Jen working together. This is not a comic that I could ever break away and do with anybody else, because it truly is a book for Jen and I to make together.
Why is it called Blackbird?
It's a great question. And you'll find out the answer in the book.
Because, you know, I'm always interested. The title usually has something to do with the story, but I'm never quite sure what. So I guess we'll have to buy the book to find out.
Exactly. It's funny because I just recently wrote a scene that reveals another clue to what the meaning of Blackbird is.
So who else is there with Nina? Does she have helpers, adversaries? How's this going to work?
She absolutely has adversaries. She's got the Great Beast right off the bat. She's got her sister Marissa, who has been kidnapped and is in grave moral danger from this point forward. And she has a helper who I can't reveal, and she has people she meets along the way who help her who I can't reveal, and she has a really big adversary in addition to the Great Beast, who I also can't reveal. That's a big end of issue issue three surprise.
I always like it when we don't know everything at the start. Some people, I was going to talk to James Tynan later on, and they had this whole year-long storyline, and the issue like 26, they revealed who the big bad was. Everybody online said, well, why didn't you do that in the first issue? And he started to laugh. Why would I do that in the first issue? I got a story to tell, and that's not the way to do it. It sounds like with this one, you're going to do some of the same thing. You're going to roll it out as the story warrants it.
Yeah, I love comics, TV shows, movies, or whatever that give you an exciting premise right off the bat. Something that you and I can talk about, or we could put in solicit, something that gets broadcast all over the internet, but it's just a starting point. And once the story gets rolling, we start to twist that. We start to twist your expectations of that and hit you in ways that you weren't expecting to be hit. And I think Blackbird... I know Blackbird is going to hit people emotionally in ways that they're not ready for when they come to this book.
I don't know if you know this question, but I'll ask it anyway. As far as like the characters and their appearances, did Jen pattern them after people she knows, or did she do it? Are these people in her imagination? How did she decide these things?
They're not patterned after any specific people that she knows, but Jen is an avid follower of fashion trends. It's obviously one of her strengths is her eye for fashion and looking at what's going on in the world and extrapolating and developing based on that, not just copying other people's fashions. So all of her character designs are influenced by things that are happening in the real world, and then she always just takes it to that next level to make that beautiful, iconic character, this hot person that you want to see make out with the other hot person in the book, you know?
So Blackbird's going to be an ongoing. Do you have any other projects that are coming up that we should know about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm doing Harley Quinn for DC Comics, shipping twice a month. That's been very exciting. We got issue 50 coming up, which will be a giant-sized anniversary issue. It's going to be an art jam issue with a lot of amazing guest star artists, and the entire story is about Harley Quinn breaking DC continuity. And then yesterday, we just announced my new creator-owned book called Goliath Girls with Comixology Amazon. And it's available immediately on Comixology and Amazon Kindle right now. And we made history yesterday with this book because Goliath Girls is the very first English language comic to be translated and published in the Japanese marketplace.
Wow.
Simultaneously, day and date. We've had comics go over there after the fact. We've had Japanese comics come here published simultaneously. It's the first time we're bridging the gap in the other direction.
So you're already starting to get feedback for the issue.
People in Japan are reading it right now.
Wow.
It's on the Kindle homepage. Goliath Girls is a book I created with artist Ulti Fermentaya. Three best friends who raise their own giant monster. And I've been comparing it to Pitch Perfect meets Pacific Rim. But at the big emotional moments, instead of them coming together and singing a song, there's a giant monster battle.
I always think, because I've never had children, but sometimes I know parents who say, I have such a monster of a child. Is that kind of what you're addressing, that kind of situation? You're parenting maybe a little bit?
I'm not a parent, so no, I didn't tap into that, but it's a very interesting reaction.
Is that an ongoing? How long is it going to go?
Ongoing.
Wow.
I'm working on three ongoings right now. Go big.
Wow,
go.
Man. So you get like 1 week off a month, is that how you do it?
Not even. Harley ships twice a month, so I write at least four scripts a month.
Well, Sam, it all sounds great stuff. I can't wait to read these good things.
Thank you very much. Great talking to you.
So we're here talking with some of the folks from Shade the Changing Girl, which has got some changes coming. Let's start out with Cecil. Why don't you say your name for folks?
Sure, I'm Cecil Castellucci.
And the artist lady here, what's your name?
I'm Marley Zarconi.
Okay, very good. So why don't, Cecil, you give us like a little background in case somebody didn't listen to the last time we talked. What is Shade the Changing Girl? What has it been about?
Sure. So Shade the Changing Girl, it's an alien who's a bird. Her name is Loma. She's from the planet Meta. And she is obsessed with a coat of her poetic hero. And she steals it, goes down to Earth, and possesses the body of a 16-year-old girl. And she is in this body of this big bully, and she has to navigate being a teenage girl, and her superpower is madness.
Now, how did you choose the look for her? What kind of things did you have in mind when you made her?
I'm a big fan of the Milligan series from the 90s, and Chris Bachla is, like, you know, one of my formative. So I kind of wanted to bridge what he did with a little bit more of what a 16-year-old girl would wear, but also kind of take it somewhere that an alien would. Gerard did do an initial sketch, Gerard Way did an initial sketch, you know, what he was looking at too. So it was kind of just meshing their influences and, you know, making my own thing.
Great. Now, talk about the first six issues, because that's out in the trade now, right?
Both, the first 12 are up in trades. We've got two volumes out now. Yeah, yeah. So Shade the Changing Girl is two volumes. It's 12 issues. And that arc is sort of her as a teenage girl, you know, sort of figuring out how to be on Earth, dealing with a lot of feelings, and then sort of going across America to meet her television idol, Honey, from a show called Life with Honey. And then now we sort of did a little bit of a time...
Jump,
and she's now Shade the Changing Woman, and it's these six issues. It's a six-issue miniseries, and Shade the Changing Woman is her about 5 years later.
Yep. And it's just kind of her, and she's lost kind of she was becoming accustomed to being a human in the first issue, and then she was chasing idols in the next six issues. So, like, the first two trades handle that. Now she's just stuck on Earth in a human body, so it's kind of like, coming of age, I'm becoming an adult woman, and, you know, what now? I have all this crazy power, and I also have a lot of problems, including Rack Shade.
Yeah, and what are the consequences of caring and having a responsibility towards your new home when you can't leave? Her old body is gone, spoiler alert, and so now she's sort of stuck on Earth, and, like, you know, how do you handle that care and consequence of caring?
So it's quite a change from being a bully to where she is now. That's quite a change. Talk about the making that happen, the evolution of that. I mean, 12 issues, you accomplished quite a lot. Both of you did. Talk about that, because it seems like a parable on some levels for girls growing up. You know, not every girl is a bully, but, you know, they have to change some. They're a teenager, they're different than when they become an adult. Talk about that evolution, how you did that in the 12 issues.
Sure. And I mean, I would say that, you know, evolution and changing is not just for girls. Boys change from being teenage boys to young men as well. So, and I think that, like, anybody can enjoy that part of the story. One thing I think is sort of like, moving from sort of internally, sort of navel-gazing and thinking about yourself to sort of opening up and seeing that the world is bigger than just you. And I think that's the thing that we all do from the time we're teenagers to becoming adults, where I think as teenagers, you know, everything is the first time, everything is, you know, like, a pimple is the end of the world, like, everything is, like, you know, just like dire consequences, but it's really kind of very, very self-involved. And I think that when we mature, we start to, like, sort of notice other people.
You start to take on the responsibility of, you know, handling your relationships outside of yourself. You start to understand what the consequences of, you know, being selfish are. It's just, it's growing up.
So at what point does she become the woman, the changing woman? Is that in the second trade?
It'll be third trade.
So is it going to be called Shade the Changing Woman from now on?
It's Shade the Changing Woman, yeah. Issue 5 just came out last week. Issue 6 comes out in August.
Yep.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Okay, so talk about the art evolution, too, because she's a different person now. How's it looking?
I think it used to, the first two volumes, I spent a lot of time, you know, she's a teenager, she changes clothes all the time, she changes, you know, she's constantly in flux, whereas now she's kind of more internalizing her emotions, and it's less about being flashy, and it's more, you know, I think I made it more about the coat, because the coat matters way more to her as an adult woman, because it's, you know, all the consequences are around the coat.
Yeah.
So,
The coat actually, like, becomes, the coat was always important, but the coat becomes, like, a very major player in this arc.
Yeah, so I simplified it a little bit more, just because she's not focused on being, you know, teenage about things. She's a grown adult woman, and, yeah. I guess that's how I handled her transition.
What about the supporting cast? What kind of changes did they go through in the first 12 issues?
Yeah, well, you know, in the new arc, there's a, you know, aliens on Earth are not really welcome, and so River has joined sort of in order to. He's sort of made the decision that in order to protect his friend, he's going to join this sort of terrible policing kind of organization against aliens to kind of have an inside, you know.
It's the DCHE, the Department of Capture and Holding of Extraterrestrials.
Yes.
Yeah, that's an acronym.
Yeah, it's very important. That's the acronym.
That's the government for you. They love acronyms.
So what about the other characters? I mean, talk about some of the supporting cast.
Yeah, so Lepuck, can I say what he became or what he found? He found he found a green ring and has become a sort of a lantern of Meta, of his home planet, and that was Loma's boyfriend, and so that's like a you know, like a whole new, like, sort of thing. He realizes that Earth is in danger, and her friends also, there's Megan, who's the body that she possessed, sort of makes a return in a strange and interesting way.
Just looking at it,
Megan's the spirit that will never die. She's the leftover bully that never actually dissipated. She just comes back to haunt everyone in all different forms. There's River and Teacup too, who are like our Scully and Mulder.
Yeah. Teacup's more the, you know, philosopher, and River's more sort of an active kind of person and stuff. But all the characters from the first book are major players still in the second book.
Yeah.
I mean, in the the Changing World. Awesome.
So one of the great things about this book, I like, is a strong female character, and obviously two female creators working on it, which we don't get often in comics. Talk about what that means to you guys. What's it like for you guys to be doing a female character that people can relate to, and to do it?
It was funny, the way that, like, we were put together, it was just kind of like meeting an old friend. Like, we've been saying this all weekend, because, our relationship is just really good to begin with. I've worked with guys, it's just more of your relationship with the other creator.
Yeah, I don't really think it doesn't sort of feel any different in terms of, like, relationship, in terms of, like, collaboration. I've worked with Jim Rugg, Nate Powell, like, that's not, like, any different. I mean,
it's cool because... Because, like, you know, girls, if they're reading the books, they're like, two girls working on the book, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, besides that, like, the working relationship feels pretty much the same, except for we're really good friends.
See, to me, a guy, that's a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
I love to see strong female characters because, as I like to point out, I have friends who think that a lead female should be a maternal person. And you guys have made her...
Yeah,
other aspects.
Yeah,
she's complete, and I mean there's variety in people, and including women. They aren't always.
So what do you have in store for her as we go forward? When's the next issue coming out?
Next August.
August 3rd.
And then we're done. Yeah.
Yeah, last
That's it.
Issue.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
We're finished. Last
Boom.
Arc.
What are you gonna do after that? What other things you got planned?
Oh, I've got some covers that I'm doing, but in the meantime, it's just Sleep and Wine. Yeah.
In that order.
No. Wine then sleep.
How about you?
And I've got some pitches out there and stuff, and some unannounced things, and I've got a graphic novel called The Plain Janes that you know, me and Jim Rugg are doing, that'll come out next October.
Well, hope you guys keep doing great stuff. It's been a real success, I think, and it's been great reading, so I hope you continue to do other stuff, too.
Thank you. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you so much.
I'm talking right now with John Barber from IDW Publishing. What's your position at IDW?
I'm the editor-in-chief of IDW Publishing.
Cool. I've got some stuff I would love to talk with you about. your guys' ability to make franchises work is something I'm sure other companies look at with wonderment, because, you know, like Star Trek has had, Marvel has had them, DC's had them, and they always just throw up their hands and run in terror. And you guys have Discovery going now and all kinds of stuff. You've got that Transformers, Star Trek thing going on. How do you guys do that? How do you work with franchise people and make them happy and keep you guys happy at the same time?
Well, I can't give away our secrets. I think the biggest thing is probably to, the more you can understand what the franchise is, what it's about, and work with the people that are doing it, with the people that whose franchise it is, to tell good stories. Like that, that's the trick. I mean, I think sometimes, you have to understand what makes Star Trek Star Trek, what makes it different from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Transformers or Marvel characters or Star Wars or anything, you know. And the more we can understand what makes those things go. Because I mean, I think any publisher, you can kind of look back, or any franchise, you can look back and you can see some hiccups in the comics line where you, maybe if you're a fan of like Dungeons and Dragons, you read through some of the, I mean, there's decades of Dungeons of D&D comics, and you look through some of those, and there's some that seems like, I don't know if this person knew what D&D was. You know, I don't know what if this person got what makes D&D special. You know, and I think it's a thing of finding the right editorial team that gets it, but also finding the right creators. I mean, that's number one. Is for D&D, for instance, Jim Zub is writing it, and he's a huge D&D fan and a great writer. So when you get those two together, you know, that's magical. And it's finding people that understand. You said Star Trek, how to make Star Trek work. You know, like people, like Mike Johnson's been writing Star Trek for a lot of our Star Trek books for a while. The Tiptons, and they're people that get Star Trek, and the artists are people that, it isn't just maybe them looking at some photograph or something or figuring out, I'll just draw, my regular superhero character, but then put a communicator in their hand. You know, it's understanding what the environment, the world they live in, how it feels, how it looks, how it's meant to come across. So I don't know. It's tricky, but I mean, that's the,
like Green Lantern, Star Trek. Let's talk. Yeah. I happen to love both of those. I thought those were tremendous fun. They were very true to the characters. Yeah. Any more of that coming?
You never know. Yeah. Those are great. Both, I know. Yeah. Big, a lot of fun. Mike and I are writing the Star Trek Transformers thing, so that's our next big Trek crossover. I would never rule anything out. I think we had a great time doing the Green Lantern stuff. And we're definitely having fun with the Transformers Trek.
Talk a little bit about that. I mean,
sure.
You chose the animated
series, yes,
to go with the Transformers. That's an interesting choice to me. I mean, why go that route?
That's a good question. We were kind of trying to remember at the panel earlier whose idea that was. When I first met Mike, when he was working on, he was actually writing some Transformers cartoon tie-in comics for us, so for Transformers Prime. I think that's when I first met him. This is maybe 7 or 8 years ago. One of the first things he said was like, "Oh, I've been wanting to do this since the movie universe is rebooted. As we get Transformers and Trek together," and it went through a lot of. It sat there for a long time, and then it finally started coming together, and there were a lot of permutations, a lot of things of like, should this be, Kelvinverse, would it be original series? And somewhere along the lines, the idea of doing the animated series hit, and, it's funny because there isn't that much space between the two animated series once you get to be, cosmically speaking. One was from the 70s, one was from the 80s, but there's not they're closer in eras than maybe I'd even considered. And it just seemed like a fun way to do it and a weird way to do it and a way to make it really stand out. The whole thing is going to be drawn just like it's part of the animated series. And having the characters come together in that way is just, it's been fun and it's an interesting, I don't know, we just thought it'd be we just got a kick out of the idea once it came across, and then visually it was just going to really set it apart. It wasn't going to be a boring crossover.
So when's it going to come out?
First issue is in September, I believe. I should know. Well, we're in the middle of Comic-Con, so don't hold me to any numbers, I say. It's hard to remember everything.
Now, I got one more question for you, and this is what's puzzling me ever since the con started. The announcement that you're going to produce Marvel books or print Marvel books. I never get that. I mean, you had Star Wars from them. Why doesn't Marvel print Marvel books? Why do they come to you? Again, maybe this is the same thing about the franchise business, that you figured out a way to do the Marvel books that makes Marvel happy. I mean, is that what's going on with that?
Well, the Star Wars comic was actually through Lucasfilm. Even though they're both part of Disney, they're totally separate entities. I was an editor at Marvel for almost 6 years. I have a lot of great friends and great respect for people at Marvel. I think seeing the way IDW treats the characters and has been able to take some characters and get them into markets that create comics for for younger readers. These are going to be for middle grade readers, ideally. I mean, for a while, every comic was for that. For most of when I was a kid, like that's just what comics what a superhero comic was. You had to go find alternative comics to find stuff that was aimed specifically for over 12 people. So we're really kind of trying to get some of that feel of a real all ages feel, but really directed towards 8 to 12 year olds who are growing up in a world full of Marvel characters. It's a lot of collaboration with Marvel. It's not like they're setting us loose and just saying, "Hey, go for it. We don't care." They absolutely care. We're there with us in every step of the way. We're working together. Figuring out artists, storylines. In the interest of collaboration. Here's some strengths we each have. Let's work together. We've been working with Marvel on a bunch of other things for years. It's a great, great boon. I didn't mean to take credit for it because it was underway before I became editor-in-chief. I've been editor-in-chief for all of 2.5 months at this point. I'd been an editor at IDW for a number of years before that, but I was a freelance writer for a couple of years. But, it was definitely something that, it was an opportunity. I think everybody saw that we can play to each other's strengths and collaborate and make something hopefully, fun and unique and still very, very Marvel feeling.
I don't understand why you get to print it instead of Marvel. I mean, Marvel has a... Is it that you have... you don't have to give away your secrets, but I'm just kind of fascinated.
I don't know. Possibly. I think it's a lot of... there's a lot of different pieces, I think, that go together in it. When you go out there, there are Marvel licenses books to other publishers. If you're going into like Target and buying a Spider-Man kids book or an Ant-Man kids book, they're not published from Marvel. I think Marvel has a really great focus on their core books and books related to that. Like pulling in Star Wars and stuff like that. That fits, I think, within the books that they publish. I think it's it maybe is a little bit of just here's IDW's had some success in some of this. Marvel's had success in it too. So I don't mean to take anything away, obviously, because I fully respect everybody there and I love working with them on this stuff. It's just a matter of putting everybody's heads together. I think we can kind of come up with something that maybe works better than either of us could separate.
Maybe if somebody looks at the book and sees the initials IDW, they might look at some other IDW books if they like one, maybe.
Well, I wouldn't mind. Sure. Hopefully both. Hopefully check out some other Marvel books and other IDW books. Sure. Absolutely.
Well, that's a great thing. You guys just do stuff that nobody else does, and I think it's just a great thing.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
It's always great to talk with Steve Orlando, who's got something great coming up called The Unexpected. Talk about what The Unexpected is about.
The Unexpected is about the heroes that have been lurking in the shadows of the DC Universe that you haven't seen before, from a story sense. Characters that have been quietly dealing with massively destructive, potentially crossover event level threats before they become that. The people that stop Onimar Sin before he can, you know, consume the souls of everyone on Earth and become a god. The people that stop Mandrak before he can be reborn from Final Crisis. These are the heroes that we haven't seen because they're combating evils in the shadows. And they're heroes you can meet for the first time. This is the other thing that The Unexpected is about. It's what the new age of DC heroes in general is about. It's about on-ramps to the DC universe. Neon and Firebrand are brand new from a story standpoint. They are in many ways, in my opinion at least, what DCU is about. It's about our deep bench. It's about taking concepts, repositioning them, giving them new coats of paint, and showing a new generation why they're incredible. And that's what these characters are from a public-facing, I'm talking to you standpoint. And in the story, there's two of the damn coolest characters that have been introduced in the DC Universe in a long time. Some of my favorite characters to write, and I've made up a lot of new stuff for DC, but I could work with these folks forever.
Wow. Okay, so the way it was described in the Nerdist article, and I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, it was to prevent crossover events from happening.
Yeah.
And you talked a little bit about that. I mean, crossover events sell well. So does this mean that there's not going to be any crossover events, or are you going to try prevent as many as you can?
Well, Wayne, you've been a longtime DC reader, so I think you're totally right. There will always be big events, but when we say that, we're talking about the scale of the threats they're facing. You know, they're not that they're averse to stopping robberies, but these are people that are wading into deep into the lore of the DC universe, and they're taking you along with them. They're your guides to the engrossing monolithic lore that is DC Comics, and they're in it and they're exploring it to stop it from destroying us, basically. So it's more about the scale of the storytelling. Some things are going to get through the cracks. I think you'll see some stuff. I mean, hey, we just found out Batman Who Laughs is coming back, and he's just the type of guy that our team would be after if they knew he was doing stuff. So there'll always be big events, but the key here is that you're also getting big storytelling every month with us.
I was interested when I saw that the artists are going to be listed in front of the writer, which is unusual. Was there a reason why they did that this time? I mean, you know, you're secure enough that you don't have to be first, I'm sure, but why do that as opposed to the way that it's always been done?
Well, a lot of the new age of DC heroes has been about enhancing the collaboration between the creative teams. It's very easy to just write a full script comic and send it off and say, job done, but you will get a comic out of that, but the way we're producing is the quote-unquote Marvel method, or the plot script method, which is how Stan and Jack did things. It's how the early Image creators did things, and it allows for more give and take between writer and artist. So I think that's why, because you know, when you do a plot and artists are driving your paneling layout, they're driving your storytelling, your page turns, they have a heavier hand, not just in the look of the page, but what happens on it. And I think that's great. I consider why I work in comics and not novels is because I enjoy the risk and reward of collaboration. So I'm all on board for it. I hope it continues.
Well, comics are a visual medium, as we like to say, and so we have to do that that way. Well, that's good. I mean, maybe the beginning of something new to go do that way. So it'll be fun to see. So you did very successfully and work with diversity in Justice League of America. Are we going to have diverse characters also in The Unexpected?
You have them. Firebrand herself is Filipino American. She is considering a relationship with a woman as the first arc opens. And Neon is a person who, in his more libertine lifestyle before his accident, certainly did not discriminate in who would share his bed. So you have a bisexual lead, you have a lesbian lead, and on top of that, you have Firebrand being Filipino. I hope to weave these aspects into them in the same way I did with Midnighter, where this is but one facet of their character. It informs their life, but it's not the whole of their life. These are 3D rounded, fully realized characters that, yes, are bringing new faces and new experiences to the DC Universe. I think that's what the wonder of new characters is. We can bring in new points of view, we can bring in new experiences, and still say, hey, these people can be heroes. Because why not? Anyone can be a hero.
Well, it sounds like great fun. When's it going to start?
Well, it actually started 2 months ago. So it's out now?
Yeah,
so issue one came out in June, two is out in July, or was out in July, it's already out. We'll have early August, issue three. So we hit the ground running.
Oh, I'm behind already. I got to go and get these books. Well, I hope it's a big success.
I'm hoping. Thank you, man, very much.
Right, this is a first for the podcast. I get to talk to one creator twice.
That's
Sam Humphreys. How are you doing right now, Sam?
I'm feeling very honored. Am I the record holder for the most number of times guesting on your show?
No, as in one episode, yes.
In one episode, okay, all right. Well, nobody better creep up on me because I'm going to come crush their attempt to break my record.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Harley Quinn, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're the writer.
I am the writer, and John Timms, the artist.
Hi.
How you doing, John?
Oh, everything is fine. Enjoying the con first time here in San Diego. So.
It's a wild experience, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so talk about Harley Quinn. Of course, you know, we all know her from the TV show and then the Palmiotti books. How are you guys going to move
Connor.
Her? And Connor, that's right.
Palmiotti,
yeah, we've got to make sure get those in. And now you guys are going to take her in a different direction. What are you guys going to do with her?
Well, we have a lot of plans for this run. This is a long run, very expansive. John and I have been talking about plans all day. We've got ideas all the way up through 75 and beyond. One of the major things that we want to do is bring her back to the core of the DC Universe. And one of the ways we did that right off the bat was to bring her to Apocalypse in the first arc.
All right. How about the art? I mean, what's her look going to be like? Are you going to do something different with her? Are you going to go back to the original look? How are you going to do that?
Well, it's always an art that you are trying to evolve to make things better. We have a baseline on the graphic stuff, but we'll try to improve to make Harley looks as good as we could.
Because I was surprised when Palmiotti and Connor changed her look up quite dramatically.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, it's never going to work, but on the other hand, it's taken off.
Five years later, here we are.
Yeah. But it happens again with Apocalypse. New costume,
exactly.
Harley Fury. And
Hammer Harleen.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So how different is her look going to be? Is it going to be something
we haven't seen? We've already seen it.
Okay.
Yeah. Issues 45 and 46 are already out, so people can go pick it up.
Great. So, okay, getting back to the core of the character, I'm not exactly sure what that means. Of course, we all know the story of how she came to be. She was just created to wheel a cake in that was going to blow up in Batman the Animated Series. And she's come a long way since then. What do you think the core of the character is? I mean, who is she at her very core?
Well, she's such a unique character in all of superhero comics. She's had so many incarnations over the years, from the animated series to her early comics to the Arkham Asylum video game to the Suicide Squad movie, the Connor and Palmiotti run. And she, you know, all that is shows that we've had a bunch of extremely talented, insightful creators look at Harley Quinn and decide what is the core of this character, what is irreplaceable about this character? What are the things that if you zero in on them and you focus on them, you can take this character anywhere? So they've already done a lot of the work that we would need to do if it was a brand new character or a barely used character. We get to hit the ground running. And part of what makes Harley so unique is that there's the comedy side, the zany side, the wild, out of control, violent side, the butt joke side, as we like to call it, and then there's also the emotional core. She's a survivor. She's been through a lot in her life, and because she's been through those things, she can survive, in our opinion, any situation in the DC universe. So being able to have both the sides of those characters and play, most characters don't have such a dichotomy within them. So to be able to play around with that in one character, in one book, has been a lot of fun.
Is that going to be reflected in her appearance? I mean, the different the core of the character when you're designing her and when she's doing stuff, and as far as emotion and stuff goes on her face, how are you going to deal with that? How are you going to make that happen?
Yeah, the good thing about Harley is the range that will be reflected graphically. I mean, you could go as wild as you can with expressions and situations, and sometimes she will go serious and really hard on things. So it's, as an artist, it's a challenge to try to balance all the stuff, funny, sunny stuff, and the serious things going. But for me, it's great to have that chance to go here and there with the character.
Are we going to see other parts of the DC universe in her book?
Absolutely. Like we just talked about, we're bringing her closer to the DC universe. She's already been to Apocalypse in the first issue, in the first arc. In the third issue of that arc, there's a very special guest star that we're not going to mention, we're not going to spoil. But there's elements of the DCU in every arc that we've got planned so far. We've got big guest stars, we've got obscure guest stars. And in issue 50, we're bringing in one of my favorite all-time DC Comics characters, Johnny DC, Continuity Cop.
Well, I've got to ask, can Apocalypse survive Harley Quinn? That's the question.
That's a great question. And we answer it in the form of a comic book, Harley 47.
So how many issues will she be there?
She'll be there at least three issues.
Okay, and what about drawing Apocalypse? I mean, isn't that kind of very different from Earth? How did you approach that? Did you look and see how other people done, like Kirby and other things?
Of course. I researched, Sam sent me some references, and I searched for another ones. And it was great. Of course, trying to bring Apocalypse to Harley World and Harley to Apocalypse needs to tweak some things to merge the both worlds, but I think it works.
Now, you're not starting over with a number one. In the comics industry this day, it's rare that a book goes past 50. But you guys are going to accomplish that, which is great. I'm just, so many times when you get a new creative team, you go to number one. Did you guys prefer to have it continue the current numbering? Is that how this came?
That's a question for Dan DiDio.
Okay. Well, it's just interesting to me because the character, like I said, she started as she was just going to wheel a cake in that was going to explode. And she's turned into this fantastic, character that women particularly enjoy. I think that's just a great thing. It's a great thing for women. You and I talked about women and women characters and leads and stuff like that last time. How does Harley fit into that whole situation when it comes to a female lead character? I mean, is she an ideal one, or is she one that's one that women struggle a little bit with, or some people like? How do women relate to her in your understanding?
Well, I don't think there's such a thing as an ideal woman protagonist. Women characters don't need to be put into strict boxes and definitions like that. Just like male protagonists can be all sorts of different things, and they can be all over the graph, so to speak. The same can and should be set for women protagonists.
Okay. That's good. How about, what's your opinion of that? As far as like women lead characters, what do you think about that?
Well, I really like a strong female character, and she is really strong. I mean, one of the things that I like about Harley is not only she can face any situation, but she has a lot of heart. So that's for me the core thing of on Harley.
Very good. So when does this start now?
The 4th of July.
Oh, right. Okay. You're on a holiday.
You're backing up.
Freedom, yeah.
And already two issues are out.
Okay. So, all right. So do you guys have an amount of time that you want to be on the book? Like how many issues you'd like to sell?
500 issues.
euros.
500 euros. Okay. You want to draw 500?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Well, I wish you much success. I think Harley Quinn is a great character, and I can't wait to see what you guys are doing. It's going to be great stuff.
Great. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me back. Setting a record here. This is history.
That's right. Thank you so much. That's it for this episode. Be back next time for even more interviews from San Diego Comic-Con 2018. But until then, keep reading your comics.